to Martha, right, the Queen Mother, right, who was removed from being Queen Mother because she made a mifleset, right, in other words, she made an idol, but it means not more like an abomination, right? We'll see what the abomination was in just a moment, too, for the Yisbir. Okay. Okay. So, and King Asa threw it, you know, he burnt it and threw it into Nachal Kidron, right? And they said, but after all, it could be used for fertilizers, so explanation was, right, that in Nachal Kidron, it doesn't encourage the growth of vegetation. So that I say, velo, what do you mean, no? Velo, Tanya, didn't we learn, Eloveles Orin Ba'omo, that in the base HaMikdash, the blood, the various sacrifices, okay, would be mixed in a channel, okay, on the floor. The channel was connected to a pipe, understand? And what happened? The pipe would take the blood out and it would pour it into the Nachal Kidron. Okay? Get the picture so far. So, they went into, you know, the Kidron stream. Okay? Wouldn't call it a river. I mean, it's more like a brook than it's a stream. Okay, but it's a stream. And what about it? The Nimkaron Leganonin. And then they used to sell this, meaning that the Kahanim at the base of Mikdash, right? It was sold to gardeners, Ganon, so use the word in Hebrew, Lezevel, as fertilizer, right? Umawalin Bohen. And also, you could commit trespass against them by Me'ilah. Again, remember, it means that you make use of, you make profane use of what is holy. This belonged to the Beis HaMikdash, therefore it's automatically holy, right? So, how could they make use of it? The answer is that the Kahanim sold it to them, because you're allowed to redeem things, as we learned from Hekdesh, as we said. In other words, to redeem things that belong to the temple treasury. That you could do, okay? You pay a price, and the price which is assessed by the Kahanim, right? And then you could put it to profane use. So this is what they did. All right. So you'll say, so what are they getting out of it when we said that it doesn't encourage the growth of vegetation? So the Gemara answers,
there
are various places in Nachal Kidron, right? Yesh Mokim, Megadol Mokim. In one area of Nachal Kidron, they can raise all kinds of vegetation. The Yesh Mokim, Shein Megadol Mokim. In another area, they don't. Okay. So far, so good. So now the question is, my Miflatzto, so tell me, what was this idol that she made that King Asa destroyed? So Amar Rav Yehuda. So Rav Yehuda said, "Da'ava mafli leitzulusa." In other words, he takes the word miflatzis and he breaks it up etymologically into two words: mafli, wondrously or hugely, leitzulusa. You know what a leitz is? Leitzulusa. It means not clowning so much, but it means, you know, the opposite of being holy. All right?
Right.
Right. No, it's more than that. It's more than that. To scoff at it and so on. Right. Uh-huh. Right. Right. Exactly. Right. Ketatani Rav Yosef. And you know what Rav Yosef said about this? You know what it was like? He says, Kemin Zachrus Ososolo. She made like a male phallus, right? Right. And every day she would have intercourse with the statue.
She was masturbating with it.
She was very,
very unholy. Right, right, right. This shade. Fair.
Have you ever seen the wooden figures that come out of Africa?
Yeah.
With
genitals, yeah. Yeah. Right.
Must have been a common
item. Obviously. Right.
What they're saying is that the Kohanim sold the fertilizer, if you will.
Yeah. Well, the money didn't go to the Kohanim. The money went to the temple treasury.
Temple,
of course.
They sold the
fertilizer. Right.
You
have what the man who was called the Gizmor. He was the treasurer, right? I still use the word in modern Hebrew, Gizmor. Right.
From Yosef was the original Gizmor.
Yeah, but the word Gizmor doesn't occur over there.
Doesn't?
No.
Well, he was
Right, who Mashpia del Moritz, right. He was the one who gave food, literally, to the people.
My question is, who did they sell it to? Did they sell it to farmers that were growing cultivated places in Emek Kitron? It wasn't like just to the farmers at large.
Exactly,
it was just specifically.
Was
this fertilizer actually contraband to begin with?
It had to be redeemed from the temple. If you didn't redeem it from the temple, then you were guilty of a trespass. If you're guilty of the ilah, then in that case you have to bring a korban, you have to pay a fine, etc. But to buy it from the temple treasury, that you could do in order to change it from kodesh to chulin. In other words, from holiness to being able to use it for everyday use. Right. Yeah.
So are we talking about in Canaan that originally belonged to the temple, or are we talking about the idols? What is it?
Okay.
The blood?
She had made this idol.
Yes.
He came and he destroyed it, okay? And he threw it into Nachal Kidron, okay? Yeah. Burnt and threw it into Nachal Kidron. So they say, well, it's like fertilizer, no? In other words, getting profane use. And didn't we learn that it is possible to do what? To redeem it from the Beis HaMikdash, you know, the mixture of blood and water and so on, you know, that came from the Beis HaMikdash, that came through the channel and the pipes into Nachal Kidron, you understand. So this is what they're saying, right. So that's the connection over there. Okay. I think I'll stop at this particular point, because my voice is running out at this point. Right.
Year 2006.
Right. Today is the 24th of May, the year 2006, and we are continuing. Well, okay, last night we counted 41 in the Yomer, okay. And Yom Yerushalayim is on its way, okay. So, all right. So we are on Mem Dalet Amud Aleph, and we continue from where we left off last time, okay. Okay. So, So, Amalehen Rabbi Yossi. Okay, we're roughly about 13 lines down or so. Okay, yeah, roughly one third of the way down. So, Amalehen Rabbi Yossi. Remember, Rabbi Yossi is arguing. Okay, these points. So, Rabbi Yossi said unto them as follows. Okay? He said, Halok for Nehemar, don't we have a statement in the Bible which says, V'chites nechash nechoshes, asher osa beisha. This is a reference to King Chizkiyahu, King Hezekiah, who cut down, he broke up the bronze serpent, right, which Moshe Rabbeinu had made. You remember the incident when the people of Israel, right, there was a plague of serpents, and so he made this, and when people looked upon it, then in that particular case, they were saved. But as we know in the Gemara, in Rosh Hashanah, when we studied it, where we have, you know, the original commentary upon it, that in reality, it means that as long as the people of Israel look up to the Father in heaven, then they are saved. It's not the serpent that saves them, but it's the fact that they direct their hearts to the Vedish Lelum that saves them. Okay? But at any rate, along came King Chizkiyahu many centuries later, and he destroyed it. So again, the question is, how could he destroy something like this? This was not exactly an idol, because after all, who had put it up?
Why did he destroy it?
Moshe Rabbeinu. We'll see in a moment why. He had a good reason. Okay? So, so first of all, they argued the points of halacha that are involved over here, right? This is proof. The Harei who Omer, he says, is written, Vayyoba Hashem Moshe, Asay Lecho Sorov, right? That God said unto Moshe, make unto you, unto yourself, a serpent. And when you see the word loch, or lecho, right, it means bishelach. It means it has to come from your own possession. In other words, it has to belong, you know, it has to be yours, out of your own pocket. Mm-hmm. We have a similar idea, of course, when, let's say, when it comes with the lulav, right? What is written, l'kachtem lochem b'yom harishon, right? That you have to take unto yourselves. So, what is the rule? That you have to buy your own lulav.
Right.
And you cannot be yotze with somebody else's lulav unless that person gives it to you as a matona. It's a matona, right? So, you see the stress over there, okay? L'chag ha-sukos ta'aseh l'chor. Of course, over here, it means that you have put up a sukkah, but nevertheless, it is permitted for everybody to come into the sukkah. That's already another story, okay? But with the lulav on the first day, it should really be your own property. So, this belongs to Moshe Rabbeinu. It came out of his own pocket, okay? The yain oda moiser dova sheinu shelo. And the person cannot put an iser, he cannot put a prohibition upon something that doesn't belong to him. If something belongs to me, you cannot say, I forbid you to use it. You understand? Can't do it. We have a whole business, Gemara in the Torah, where, you know, the person says, kind of a lie, I take a note that I'm not going to have any hador for this or that, and so on and so forth and so on. But can he do it to say, you cannot have hador from your own property? That he can't do. He could say, you can't have any hanoah from me. You know, he's a nasty guy, okay? That he can say. But he cannot say, you cannot have hanoah from what belongs to you. Okay? So the question is, no. So why did King Chizkiyahu destroy it if it belonged to Moshe Rabbeinu, right? The Hosam Bedinhu, the Chatusay, the Havit Soref. And not only that, it says that in reality he didn't have to chop it into pieces. Why? Because after all, it was Moshe Rabbeinu's property, and he should not be permitted to destroy it, right? Okay? So why did he do it? How did he get away with it? Elo, Kevin, the Chosan, the Kotor, Yisrael, Masrei. But when he saw that the people of Israel were literally going astray, okay, that's the real meaning of Torah over here. Of course, sacred and things like that. But going astray is the real best translation for this. He saw that they were going astray after it, meaning what? That they made like an idol out of it. As I said, right contrary to what we learned in the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, that it's only that you should put your thoughts to the Beinu Shalom, instead that they felt that by looking at it automatically, you know, this is like a, I don't know what, a fetish or something, what do you call it? I mean, this would cure them, okay?
They attributed power to,
right.
To the thing.
Exactly. And so therefore, King Chizkiyahu was very unhappy with this, and that's the reason why he destroyed it. So he had a good reason for it in order to do it. And we have several references, Gemara Psochim and some other places, where they said that King Chizkiyahu did several things that they approved of, and several things that the people, that the Chachomim did not approve of. But one of the things that they approved of is that the Kitesh the Chash Chanochoshes, right, that he destroyed this, and the Chachomim felt that he was right in doing it. Okay. So he said to them, look, let's take a look at another pasuk that we find. This time it's in Shmuel Aleph, okay, or Shmuel Beis, right. Alok v'nemar, it's written over there, what? Vayazvu shom esat habehem, vayusayim David v'adoshav. Okay. There they discuss a battle that was fought by King David against the Philistines. And when the Philistines were defeated, they left behind various possessions, you know, because they ran away. So what did they leave behind? Among the things that they left behind is atzabehem. In other words, their idols, right? And what happened? And then vayisaim David v'adoshav. David and his people, they literally lifted them, right? They took them. But we'll see in a moment that they give a different interpretation with vayisaim. My mashba, the high v'yisayim, right? David, and it's written by Yisayim David. What is the meaning of this by Yisayim David? He says, Lishno, this is a language which means that he scattered the remains of it. Yeah, but he scattered the remains of them. In other words, what did he do? Obviously, then what we're saying is that what David HaMelech did, he took these idols and he destroyed them. Okay? And he scattered them. Remember, we learned that, you know, one of the ways of disposing of an idol is to crush it and disperse it, let the wind carry it away. Just as we learned that this is one of the ways in which you can dispose of chametz too. Right?
Loved it.
Loved it, right? So, okay. But I don't have to tell you that this is a forced interpretation of the word by Yisayim, which only means to think that he carried it.
Yeah.
Okay. That would be a literal meaning. So, how do they get it to mean that he scattered them? Yeah, of course. With the grubbing finger. So he says, "Could the target Rav Yosef?" Says as Rav Yosef quoted the Targum, you know, the Aramaic translation, where it's written over there. This happens to be in Yeshayahu, right? Tis rain the ruach tisoeim, right? Which means you will scatter them, and the wind will carry them away. So, in other words, what do we see? That is rain, right? Zerum, right? and these so, you know, that they're related to each other, right? The idea is to carry away. This is the drush that we have over here.
All right.
Okay? Because the pasuk says, Tizraim, a metargamin, and then the targum says, Tizridin, in other words, we'll scatter them, the ruach, the taltalin, will carry them. Okay? So again, objection. Omer Levi Shavraya, this is a proof for you. Hare Huaymer, it's written by Yisrafu Ba'esh, it's written and they burnt them in fire. Udamelo Kasiva Yisrafaim, and it's not written that he burnt them by Yisraim, right? then he carried it away. So Shema Minor, from this we see that Vayisaim, right, is Mamish Mikol Mok, Vayisaim has to do with what? Mamash, but he carried them away, actually. He really carried them away, okay? And that you shouldn't translate it, you know, that the word means he scattered them. So, it says, Mikol Mokom, in any case, he says, Kosher Kraya Hadodi. These psukim, they contradict each other. It's difficult to figure it out, okay? Kitaravuna. And Rav Huda noticed this, and he said, Rav Huda Rami, he raised the question about the contradiction between the psukim, where it says, Kesiv, it's written first of all, Vayim and David, right? Mm-hmm. David said, Vayistrafu Vayesh, and they burnt them in fire, right? Ukesiv, and then it's written, Vayisoim, and he carry them. So, what's the story? So he says, no kasha. He says, it's not a difficulty, because here comes a new character. Kan koidim shebo iti hagiti, kan liyacha shebo iti hagiti. Okay. In one case, it's before iti hagiti came. Of course, the question is, who was iti hagiti? Right? where towards the bottom of where the lines are still narrow. Okay?
Okay.
Right. Iti Agiti. Iti happened to be a Philistine. Okay? Because what does Hagiti mean? It means he came from the town of Gats. Gat. Ashkenazi would be Gats, and then Israeli pronunciation is Gat. Okay? So what about him? He happened to decide that he was going to join David HaMelech's army. Okay? He was fed up with the Philistine army, so he became a member of David HaMelech. So what we're saying is that he came along, and these Philistine idols that were captured by the Jews, you know what he did? He destroyed them. You know, he made them bottle. In other words, remember, you know, we said, you know, that he nullified them.
He was allowed to do that, right?
He was allowed to do it. A goy is permitted to nullify an idol. That's what we said. We've been saying that for the past couple of weeks, okay?
Right.
Okay. So he's the one who did it. And as a result, then David and his soldiers, they could carry the idols, because since they were nullified, then they could have Hanor and do whatever they want with it. Okay. Dixiv, we know that. So we have an interesting mice. It's Vayikach et Ateres Malkom Meyal Roshe, right? And he took the crown of Malkom. Malkom means literally their king, Meyal Roshe, from on top of his head. Right, well, Mishkalah, and it weighed Kikar Zohav, a talent of gold. I don't have to tell you a talent. Gold is heavy, and a talent of gold is something like at least 50 pounds or something like that. So, problems. Problem number one is, so what? He took the king's crown? All right, God's fine. But it's understood here that it should not be understood as Malkom, but rather as Milkom. And Milkom, we know, was the god worshipped by the Ammonites, was their idol. Okay? So, in other words, apparently what it seems over here is that there was an idol. On top of the idol was a crown, and this crown was heavy. And he took it. But we'll see in a moment, they go back again to understanding it not as the idol's crown, but as the king's crown. Because now they raise the following question. Okay? It weighs at least 50 pounds, right? And we have two problems. If you say it's an idol, right? Or Mishori, is it permissible to take the idol's crown? Is Suri Hanoa Ninu? Isn't this having Hanoa from it? And that, as we learned, is prohibited, not allowed to have Hanoa from an idol. So that's problem number one. So Amar Rav Nachman, so Rav Nachman came first of all and said, what, that Iti Hagiti Bo Uditlo, right? That Iti Hagiti came along and he nullified the idol. So, okay, God's fine. So that's the idol. But what are you going to do with Mishkalo Kikar Zohav, right? Heichimotze Manachlon. If it weighs a talent of gold, how could he place it upon his head? Presumably that David HaMelech took this royal crown and he put it on his head. How could he do it if it weighs so much? Understand? So Omar Rav Yehuda, Omar Rav, so Rav Yehuda said in the name of Rav that Re'uyo lo nuach al Rosh David. He didn't actually put it on his head, but a crown of this kind was worthy of being placed upon the head of David HaMelech. So that's one explanation. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Hanino, Omar, he said, no, I have a different explanation. He says, Evin show Evis Hoyesobo, right? The Habas Dorla. Okay. And he gives the following. He says, Evan Shoevis. Evan Shoevis is a magnet. Literally, a magnet. A stone. Well, obviously, they had experience with magnets, too. Right. It's not a recent invention. This was a real good magnet in that what? According to Rashi, the magnet was... it was placed on the top of the throne, right? So that the magnet held the crown. So it didn't actually weigh upon his head, but the magnet held it in place. Right, right. Migdal Pareach.
The magnet would hold up
for it. I'm telling you, this had to be an electromagnetic one.
No, it was a great miracle since it
found right.
Perfectly round where it was
right.
Said, yeah. Not.
Right. Maybe it was 100%.
Right. So that's another explanation. But now along comes a third explanation. All right?
Do you know magnetic properties?
What?
Gold does not respond.
Magnet won't hold up gold.
Does it?
No,
it's not magnetic.
He calls it Evan Shoever.
Right.
It sucks it up.
Right.
Sucks it up.
It's a miracle.
It's a miracle.
Right.
Something with a special
skyhook.
At any rate, Rabbi Elozo Amar, he says, no, you know what the story is. He says, Evin Yikoro Hoyosefo. It had a very precious stone, the crown. Sheshova Kikakasevo. Ah, in other words, the jewel is worth a talent of gold. So, in other words, the crown is not that heavy, but it's the jewel that was worth all that money. So, okay, that's a more rational explanation. Okay.
Good day.
Yeah. All right. David HaMelech says in Tehillim, Zois Hoyos Oli, this happened to me, Kifu Kudecho Natsorti, because I have kept your commandments. So it's Michael Omar. So what was David trying to say in this pasuk? So Hochi Omar. He said as follows. He says, "Mischar shepikudech odatzarti zois hoyser li edus." Okay. That is the result, as far as a reward, that I have kept your commandments. So this has been given unto me as a testimony. So my Eduso, what is the testimony? Omar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says, Shehoyo manicho bimekayim tefillin b'hoylamta. Imagine that, he says. He was able to take this crown, right, and put it on his head where the tefillin are kept, and it fitted him perfectly. Okay? So, boy, I do hate tefillin. So they say, what do you mean? He has to put on tefillin, even David HaMelech has to wear tefillin. El Sayyid, right? So Amar Rav Shmuel Bar Rav Yitzchak, he says, Bokim Yesh Boresh Sherovi Lanir Beshtei Tefillin. So his explanation is what? That there is a place on the head where it's possible to wear two tefillin. This area over here, it's possible to have not just one shel rosh, but to have another shel rosh as well. So this is a famous quotation.
I mean, maybe they already knew that at that time there was going to be tefillin Rabbeinu Tam,
Rabbeinu Tam,
and
Rashi.
And you need
you
two
don't
tefillin
at the same time,
right?
Right. You don't
right.
Wear
both
the
together.
One explanation about this. I saw in a tshuva some time ago. Chassidish Rebbe, he said, I see these people. They come, they carry mirrors in their tefillin bags. You know, in order to be able to see that they put it right. He says, why do they have to bother so much? He says, inasmuch as there's place over here for two tefillin, so what does it matter if it's a little this way or a little bit that way or something like that? Well, of course, we try to do it the right way. Well, it's interesting. I mean, that
the people carrying mirrors. That's
apparently.
Because that's also a
it all depends what you use the mirror for.
Right. Let's put it that way. Yeah.
You shouldn't pray to a mirror. That you should not do. Okay. Of course, it looks like you're praying to yourself. Okay. All right, so that's one explanation. Then it's written, Vayotziyu es ben hamelech. Okay, they brought out the son of the king, Vayitnu alovis hadezer v'yeso edus, and they placed upon him, or they gave unto him, the nezer, that's the crown, and also the testimony. So, okay, nezer, this we know, Zulkalila, this is the crown. Obviously, he's a king, and they made him a king in place of his father, do you understand? So they put a crown upon his head.
Who are they talking about? Yeah.
They're talking about a different king right now.
You don't know the name of the king?
I don't remember. I should have looked it up.
Okay.
His name is Yoash. Right. Right. This is where do we see Yoash? The Haftarah that we have for Parsha Shkolim. How does it begin?
Remember
Ben Sheva Shonim Yoyosh Bimolko, right? And so he was a young, remember? Right. Talia tried to murder them. She murdered all his brothers and so on and so forth. But he was hidden by Chilkiyahu HaKohen of Galil, right? Exactly. So then when they deposed her, they made Yoash the king, and naturally they had to invest him with the royal crown. Okay, but what is the edus that they also gave him? That's the question. So Omar Rav Yehuda, Omar Rav, edus who leveis David, right? The edus, the testimony is that as far as the base David is concerned, in other words, the dynasty of King David, right? His descendants, shekol harawi lemalchus, that whoever is worthy of becoming a king, then holamto. Then in that particular case, it fits him beautifully, right? In other words, the crown fits him beautifully.
Are you saying that he was a direct descendant of King David?
Oh yeah, of course, absolutely. The chol sheino ra'i lemalchus, but someone who is unworthy of being a king, then ein holamto. Okay, then it does not fit him perfectly. Okay? Doesn't suit him, does it? Still use this word, by the way, holeim, to mean, originally the word meant actually to beat or something like that. But, like, for example, the heartbeat or something. However, Olam is used in modern Hebrew the same way it's used over here. In other words, Abeget Olam, the garment suits you very nicely, or something like that. Okay. All right. Yes. The kings of Yehuda, Judah, right? Malchi Yehuda, they were all descendants of King David.
He found it, bit his head, he didn't really become king then.
Right.
That was the test.
Right. That was a test. Exactly.
He was a grandson of Hezekiah, no? Was Hezekiah the Moshe?
Of who?
Hezekiah?
No, because he came later.
Came later?
Oh, yeah. Right.
Okay.
Now they go to another story about, since we're talking about a descendant of David, and is he worthy of being a king? So if you remember, at the time when King David lay dying, right, there were two rivals. One of them was Adonio ben Chagit, right? Chagit was his mother. Remember that King David had six wives, okay? So one of them is Chagit. Popular name in Israel again today.
What's that?
It's a popular name for a woman in Israel today, Chagit. So Adoniyahu was the son of Chagit, okay? And on the other hand, who was his rival? Shlomo HaMelech. And who was his mother?
Bathsheba,
exactly. And so we read at the beginning.
Who was older? Who was older?
Adoniyahu, really.
Was Avshalom also the son of Chagit?
He had a divide. Baha, I'm sorry, not making it right. Baha, pretty sure. So, at any rate, what we find over here is, if you remember, that Bathsheba pleads with King David in his dying moments that he should recognize her son Shlomo as king, right? And at the same time, Adoniyahu has made a great big banquet for royal officials, the heads of the army, Eviatar HaKohen, and so on. And, you know, and he has proclaimed himself as the new king. So, what the Gemara is saying over here, right? Right, quoting, Melachim Aleph, over the first chapter, Adoniyahu ben Chagit, right? Mitnasei le'mor ani emloch, right? He exalted himself, saying, I will reign as king. Omar Rabbi Huda, Omar Rav, so Rabbi Huda said, the name of Rabbi says, Shemitnasei le'homo, yeah. He tried to exalt himself that it should fit him, meaning the crown, right? But it did not fit him. Okay.
And we had already fixed it, so it fitted Shlomo's.
Right, so that was sign number one, I mean, that he was not worthy to be the king. Okay. Oh, we said it was a test, right?
Yeah, but the next one is even better.
Yeah.
All right, and then it says, concerning Adoniyahu, it says, Vayas lo rechev v'farashim, right? He made for himself a chariot and horsemen. V'chamishim ish rotzim lefonav. And 50 men would run in front of him. So they say, Bairu is higher. So there's a voice. What is so remarkable about that? It says, Tana, we have a tradition that says Kula Tulet Kol Chakuke Kapus Horglaim Poyu, that all of them had their spleen removed and also their souls hollowed out in a certain way.
The soles of their feet.
Right, the soles of their feet. So that they could be fast runners. That's the point.
What?
So they could be fast runners.
If they took their spleen out, they can't live. You can't live without a spleen.
Christish. I don't know. I've heard of people who lost their spleen and they didn't live.
I've heard of people who the spleen is heavy. Right. It makes them run slower.
It's the source of all your blood.
Right. So. Okay. At any rate.
Sometimes they do remove the spleen.
I know, I've heard of operations that are right. They've lost it for whatever reason. Right, exactly.
They get a bleeding from the spleen.
Yeah.
They remove it.
Right, right. Well, I know, I've read about such a thing.
Not good for them.
I wonder who the same surgeon was that did that surgery that time.
No, okay. So he had a couple of good doctors over there.
Guzzle.
No. Kate Guzzle had enough blood already with the sacrifices. They have to go into this business.
All right.
And what if the patient died? Then the Kate Guzzle would become Tony.
We'll take it as fate.
Okay. So
why
now.
Why did he do that?
Why did he do that? In order to show what grandeur he had. He was exalted. He had 50 men running before his horsemen and everything else. You know, the horsemen are like, let's say, you see a whole group of motorcycle cops running in front, right?
Advanced guard.
But, for example, in Rome, a big official always had people who would walk in front of him. They were called lictors, right? And they had the fascias.
The what?
The fascias, in order to beat people who got in the way or something like that. I mean, how do you have the concept of fascism? It's from the old lictors that they used to carry these bundles, these sticks, in order to beat anybody who got in the way. This shows that you were a big shot if you had people going in front of you in order to clear the way for you. So the same thing, I thought Jochen felt, you know, he was entitled to the same kind of treatment. Okay? All right. Now we start a new Mishnah, very interesting. Mem Dalet Amud Beis. Okay, 45B. And here we have Shaul Proclus Ben Pilosophus Rabbi Gamliel Ba'akel. Okay. Proclus was the son of Pilosophus, or maybe Ben Pilosophus simply means the philosopher. Because, for example, we have B'nai Hanaviyim. What is B'nai Hanaviyim? Doesn't mean necessarily the sons. Doesn't mean that. What it means is that they were members of the Nevi'im class or group or something like that. You understand? We learned that Gemara and Megillah, B'nai Ha'ir. What does B'nai Ha'ir mean? It means the people in the city.
Right.
Okay? So, Ben Philosophus over here, I think, frankly, it means something to the philosopher. He was a philosopher. Naturally, what kind of philosopher? A Greek philosopher. Okay? He studied Greek philosophy. But at the same time, according to Rashi, take a look at the top of it, he says, he was a min, in other words, a sectarian who was an idolater. Okay? Usually they use min more in the sense of, for example, the Christians, the early Christians who were the min. So, to me, it makes a little bit more sense, but nevertheless, maybe he was both.
He was Greek, he says afterwards.
Yeah,
he was worshipping Aphrodite.
Yeah, I understand.
Right?
I understand. This is why I say, I mean, that, but usually minim refers to people, you know, like the early Christians who had separated themselves from Jews. That's the point. So, at any rate, situation is, there's Rabbi Gamliel and Akko, Shoya Rechitz Bamechot Shal Aphroditi, okay? And Rabbi Gamliel was bathing in the bathhouse, it's called the Aphroditi bathhouse, right? In the city of Akko, okay? Akko, if you remember, is north of north of Haifa, on the bay over there, Mediterranean,
the
so, right. So, there's a lot of Greek, Romans, and so on over there, besides Eden at the same time. So he was in the bathhouse, okay? So Proclus asks him the following question. He says, Omale, he said, Kosu b'toyolatschem, it's written in your Torah, lo yidbak b'yotcho mi'um l'achirem, right? That nothing, what, you know, pertaining to idolatry, should cling unto you. And remember, we saw that this was the justification for what? Not to have any hanoa. So, what are you doing over here, Rabbi Gamliel?
Well, bathing
over here, and there is a statue of Aphrodite over there. Aphrodite knows the Greek version of Venus, okay? And, you know, she's usually portrayed as a woman without any clothing on. Okay. So, what did Rabbi Gamliel say to him? He said to him, I cannot answer you something about Torah as long as I'm in the Merchot, I'm in the bathhouse, right? Okay. After he left the bathhouse, so Amalo, he said to him, Ani loy bossi bigvulo, he bore bigvulo. Says, I didn't come to an area which belonged to Aphrodite. She came into an area which really belongs to me, to the public in general. We don't say, let's make a bathhouse as an adornment for Aphrodite. Ella, Omer, but people say, Nasa Aphrodite Noilamechas. Let's make an Aphrodite as a decoration for the bathhouse. So, in other words, what's more important, the Mechas or Aphrodite? Then he gives another argument. He says, Dovrachim. Another argument that is given. Im Noistim Lecho Momen Harbe, Hiato Nichdos Labez Kerchovim. Shalacho Orum, right? He says to Proclus, he says, look, you're a goy, all right?
No.
You're a goy. Says, if they were to give you a lot of money, would you go in to a temple of the Avodah Zarah, Orum, naked, Uval Keri, and having a seminal emission, or mashtim before Neho, or urinating in its presence. And yet, he says, Zua beres halpi habiv, take a look, here is a statue, right? And it stands right above the, you know, the sewer, the pipe, you know, that goes out, okay? The chol ha'om mashtim before Neho. Everybody urinates over there. So what kind of Abedazor is this, he says. The Pasuk says, Leinemar is not written Elo except it's written Elohehem. They're gods, right? What do you mean they're gods? It says, Esh Elohehem by Mishum Eloa Osir. If you act towards it with respect, that it's a god, that's one thing, that is prohibited, right? But if you behave in the fashion that we said before,
your name definitely
right, etc., etc., right? So in that particular case,
what kind of god is it?
Right, what kind of divinity, exactly. Okay.
He was a smart guy.
Right. Well, we'll continue for a few more minutes and we'll call it a night tonight. Okay. All right. So now, the Gemara, however, raises some objections on this Mishnah. Okay. Says, Vahechi Yovid Hochi. How could he do something like this?
He called it that.
Right. Right. The Omar, Rabbi Barbachoda, Omar, Rabbi Yochanan. Didn't Rabbi Barbachoda say in the name of Rabbi Yochanan? Objection number one. you're permitted to have thoughts of Torah. Let's lahar here. You think about it, you know.
You're supposed to have thoughts of Torah when you go through that.
No, well, he says mutor, hold it. Let's not jump to a conclusion, all right. Mutor means it's permitted to have thoughts about Torah. Chutz, except mebeis hamechatz, when you're in the bathhouse, mebeis hakisi, when you're in the bathroom. There, don't think Torah thoughts, right? Bechi teimor, and if you argue that b'lashon choyel omar lei, that he told, you know, gave him an answer of Torah, not in Lashon Kodesh, but in an ordinary language, let's say in Greek or whatever, okay? I know prophets understood Yiddish, but Greek he probably did understand, okay? I mean, remember we learned, I mean, that Rabban Gamliel, you know, always mixed with the society, had to deal with the government, and so he spoke Greek, Latin, I mean, he was familiar with these things, okay? So he probably spoke them in Greek, which was the common Goyish language over there, right? Besides Aramaic, right? So, at any rate, so how can you talk Torah even in another one? According to Rabbi Yochanan, not supposed to, right? Let's see, did I come to it? Rabbi Yochanan, Mutal Harik was in right. Vechitemo, Bilashan Choyel, so Amalei, so Amalei, so Amalei said, Devorim shel Choyel, things that, you know, have nothing to do with holiness, Mutal Yabud, Bilashan HaKadosh. You can even talk about them in Lashon Kodesh. Imagine, you can use Ivrit to talk about ordinary things. Unlike, Hasidim, feel that Ivrit is Lashon Kodesh, and Lashon Kodesh is only for Helik and Zafin and so on.
Yeah.
Right. But Abaye said, no, you can use it, okay? But Devarim Shel Kodesh, words or things that have to do with holy, holy object, holy subject, Asur La'amam B'Lashon Choyel, then you cannot discuss them in an unholy language. Interesting. Okay.
So the Devarim Shel Chol you can say either in Lashon Kodesh or otherwise.
Right.
But the Devarim Shel Kodesh you have to say only in Lashon Kodesh.
That's right. Exactly.
It's a good
okay.
thing.
No,
hopefully
right.
it's not how I found, because otherwise we're going to have to stop.
I hate to tell you, but it's codified. The Rambam. Rambam quotes this, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So, Satana. So, the tradition is what? When he left the bathhouse, that's when he first answered him, and he said, you know, that I can't give you an answer in the bathhouse itself. Because even that would be like discussing Torah. Like, hot geschwiggen, that's all.
Yeah,
he shook his head and said, okay.
He caught him with his hands down.
Right. Well,
exactly.
Yeah.
That's the whole point.
Omar Rav Chona, Bar Yosef, Beribi. Okay, yeah, it's probably Beribi. All right. So Rav Chona, Bar Yosef, because Beribi here means not that he was the son of Rebbe, but that he was a scholar. Okay. And he said, Omar Rav Oshaya, the name Rav Oshaya. Okay. It's already obviously later, because Rav Oshaya was among the later generations of Amorim. It says Teshuva Genuva Heshivo. Rabbi Galil Yosef Hegemon says, you know, I don't like the answer that he gave him. He says Teshuva Genuva. I gave the answer Rabbi Gamliel gave to this official. Hegemon normally would be, you know, like a lord and so on. I mean, Hegemon's a Greek word. You recognize it, like. Yeah, they use it, but the word originally it's Greek for a leader, right? I mean, we have it, right? Yeah, very often means like the Lord or the general in charge of the army, or something like that. The hegemon, right? Yeah, English comes from that, of course. So he says, he gave it a kukawetzer, he says. Vadi Eimer, he says, but I say, Eino Gedura. No, really it was not. It really was a sensible answer. Okay. Rashi uses the expression that we find in the Gemara, that Dochor Sebekash, that, you know, literally, he pushed it aside with straw. In other words, he gave him, you know, an answer which really was not the real answer, but only it's something in order to take care of this situation. Right. Okay. So, at any rate, right. But he says, but I say it's not. Why? So he says, Magadufse, what is the, you know, the falsity level, shall we say, in the answer name? The Ka'oma Loi, he said to them, Loi Zuo Meres Al Pi Habiv, right? Isn't this standing on top of the channel? The Cholodah Mashtim Mifoneho, right? And everybody is urinating in his presence. No, V'chi Mashtim Mifoneho, my father. And if so, if they're doing that, so what? Well, my Robo, didn't Robo say that we have another idol that is discussed? This is the idol Peor, which was the idol of Moab, if you remember. Okay? Peor. Yeah, well, Peor, and so on. Okay, it says, Peor Yochiach, he says, proves that, you know, how it is served? Shemefarin lefonav becholyo. In other words, people bear their rear end to it, and they defecate in front of it. That's the way that Peor was served. Okay? Don't ask me what. But this is a tradition. It's a tradition.
It's the god of fertilizer.
Right. Okay. So, if that's the case, the fact then that they're urinating in front of Aphrodite, right? In that particular case, does that detract from the holiness of the idol then? That's the point that he's trying to make, okay? Doesn't, right? That's why he says that this is a phony answer that he gave him. To Shuva Ganuva, a phony answer, okay? Right. So, the answer is, yeah. Right, and still the idol remains an idol to the people of Moab, right? And I say, no, it's not really a funny answer. Because Peor is worshipped this way. But the Aphrodite, right? That's not the way you worship her. Okay. Omar Abaye. So Abaye gives a different explanation. He says, the phoniness of the answer can be derived from the following. The Ka'oma Lei, he said unto him, Ani loy bosi bigvulo, I didn't come into her territory, right? The he bo bigvuli, but she came into my territory.
Right.
Yeah. The he bo bigvulo, my father, and I came into, right? To her dominion, whatever you want to say, to her territory, my harvest, or what? The Hortanan, didn't we learn where it says, Avedis Kechovim, Sheyeshlo, Merchot, so Gido, Nen in Mehen, right? Shaloi Betrefa. It says that if you have an Avedis Zora, and attached to the Avedis Zora, there is a bathhouse or a garden, right? You can enjoy what? The bathhouse or the garden, but shelo betova, without showing any gratitude for the use of the property.
Don't pay for it. Huh?
Right. The ein mehen betova, but you know, don't have hanor from them, notice, don't you know, have enjoyment from them by showing favor to them or by thanking them or whatever. Right. Well, Neomir, and I say, Eino Genuva, it's not It's not a phony answer. Shelo b'tovas Rabban Gamliel ki b'tovas achim. It says, Rabban Gamliel, the favor that is given unto him is not like the favor that is given to other people. Meaning what? Meaning that Rabban Gamliel, okay, he is a very important figure.
Yeah.
And so therefore, he doesn't have to thank them for the use of this property simply because of the fact that he is like a good advertisement for them.
Celebrities.
Right, it's a celebrity, exactly. I mean, if you know that you're going to find movie stars in this place, you know, you're inclined that you want to go with
them
too, right?
Right,
to go see them. So, so he doesn't have to thank them for it, you see. But other people, you know, might feel that if they're enjoying it, they have to show their appreciation. And that would mean what? That you're showing appreciation for the Avodah Zarah, to which either the garden or the bathhouse are attached.
Line.
Right, right. Yeah.
Real fine line.
Okay, Rav Shimi Bar Chiya Omar Genuvsa. He says it's a phony answer, Mehocha, from this fact. Tika Omar Loizu Emetis Al Habiv. Right? Isn't this standing over the drain pipe? Right? The Chol Adam Ashtinen Bifaneh, and everybody is urinating over there. The Chi Mashinen Bifaneh My Haven. So what? Right? The Hot Nan. Didn't we learn that rak b'foneha, if a man spit in the presence of the idol, okay, hishti b'foneha, or if he urinated in his presence, or gerira, he dragged it, v'zorak bo'ez hatsoya, or he threw filth on it, okay. Gebof drag. Right. It still doesn't take away from the importance of the eye. Right.
Wow.
Yeah. Va'niyomir, but I say Eino Genuva. That it's not a phony answer. Hasam lefishatahu rasach Allah, because for a moment the guy will be angry if he sees this, but it's only for a moment. But hold him a fire slave, but then he comes down and it's garnished with garnish. Okay. But hacha, here, kol shato vishato, is zulzula kayama. But when people urinate constantly in front of it, so what does it show? It shows that they really don't have any regard for it, right? Even the goyim, right? Rav Barula Abar, he says, gnufsa mehocha. Says the phoniness, the answer is in this respect. The Ka'amale said to him, Ein Oimrim Nase Mechos Noi La Predicti, El Nase Predicti Noi La Mechos, right? People don't say, let's make a nice bathhouse and dedicate it to Aphrodite, but they say, let's make an Aphrodite as a decoration for the bathhouse. The Chi Yoma Nase Mechos La Predicti Noi, right? And he says, you know, let's make a bathhouse Aphrodite as a decoration. My havas, so what? Behold, Tanya, didn't we say, Ho'eme b'yaseh l'avidus kechovim, or keseh l'avidus kechovim, le'yamar klum. If a guy says, this house is for Avodah Zarah, or this goblet is for Avodah Zarah, it doesn't mean anything. She'ein hekdesh l'avidus kechovim. Because with idolatry there is no hekdesh. The idea of hekdesh applies only to what? To the Beis HaMikdash, right? But not to goyim. But Yomer, and I say, Eino Genuva, it's not a phony answer. Why? The Tzurei Lemistori, the Tzurei Lemistori, right? That it's not prohibited. There is a prohibition, but it's not prohibited. But nevertheless, there is still something that's nice over there, and therefore it's positive. Okay. All right, we'll stop at this particular point.
Okay.
Yeah, and Mirz Hashem next week. Next week, of course, is the night prior to...
the very bottom.
Right. Yeah, we went right to the bottom of the dock.
Okay,
tonight is the 31st of May in the year 2006, and we continue now in Avodah Zarah. We begin Daf Mem Hei. Daf Mem Hei. New Mishnah. Now, this chapter, as we see, after all, what is it called? It's called Kol HaTzlomim, right? And we went through this chapter, the third chapter.
What is it called?
Kol HaTzlomim. The very first Mishnah began with that. In other words, we dealt with idols, okay? And the question, you know, that we've had all along is, are they osur b'hanoah or not? In other words, are they prohibited to have any benefit whatever? Or can we have benefit even though it has something to do with idolatry? So the Mishnah that we'll be studying tonight is sort of in line with that. The Mishnah begins by saying, "Hanochrim oivdim es horim es hagvoes ein mutarin v'marshalehen asurin." Okay. Parsha Ekev, after the introductory psukim which deal with the blessings that will happen, you know, as a result of following God's commandments. And then after that, it goes into what happens when the people of Israel will come into Eretz Yisrael, a land, you know, which has been promised by the Levena Shalilim, a land flowing with milk and honey, etc., etc., and so on. And the problem that they face is that the inhabitants of this land are idolaters, as we know, okay? And of course, the basic fear was that what would happen to the people of Israel once they settled in the land of Canaan? They'd become so absorbed with idolatry, you know, that they'd find it so attractive that, you know, they would turn aside from the worship of God. This
not
is the problem. Pardon me?
Not if their faith was strong.
Yeah, correct. If their faith was strong, right.
Slaves that came out of Egypt, they don't know any better.
Right, but we're talking also about their descendants. Their descendants that were born in Eretz Israel, even, and subsequently, and still, many of them, you know, fell into the worship of the local Canaanite deities, the Baal, the Ashtoreth, and so on and so forth. Yes?
The people who are writing the Talmud,
right,
living in a land of idolaters, were they not?
Yes, they were, absolutely.
So it had meaning for them in their time.
Of course it did. Absolutely. I mean, don't forget, the Mishnah reflects the kind of civilization, even though there's Eretz Yisrael, and even though there were Jews living in Eretz Yisrael, but still, under whose dominion was it? It was under the dominion of the Romans, okay? And the Romans and the Greeks who had preceded them, so that even if there was no more a Canaanite Avodah Zarah that had been destroyed, you know, in the course of history, but there were the Roman and the Greek Avodah Zarah, you know, that flourished, okay? And Babylonia was a different story, as I mentioned from time to time, that there the challenge was really Zoroastrianism, which was a different type of a religion. But still, it was Judaism, we understand, okay? So, in the Torah then, in Parsha Ekev, as I said, you know, there the problem is discussed. And among the things that says over there is that Al Heharim, Haramim, Al Hagbaros, Pesachas, Koleis, Naradon, which means upon the high mountains and the high hills, and under every leafy tree, and so on and so forth, obviously what? Avodah Zarah is being observed, right? It's being practiced. And so the question that would come, you know, as we now have over here, as Rashi explains, he says, take a look at the top line, right? It says, Hein Mutorim, which means they are permitted. Who is the they? The answer is, the they refers to Hehorim Atzmon. We're talking about the mountains, the hills. They are mutoren. In what sense are they permissible? It's lachzoiv avonim mehen, but it's ria, right? In other words, you're permitted to dig stones from there, you know, have quarries and so on and so forth, or you can plant over there. In other words, what is Rashi explaining to us? That the mountains, even though they were being worshipped as deities, and this we know, you know, that the mountains, the hills, the rivers, streams, and so on and so forth. Right. Right.
He created, right?
So correct, what, correct. We had a similar business a few weeks ago when we were discussing about the sun, the moon, the stars, constellations, and so on. A similar business, you know. So, you're right. The Beit Shalem created them. So that, therefore, should they be prohibited for Hanoah? In other words, should they be prohibited for us to make some use out of it? Even though idolatry, even though they are considered as idols, that's the point. Even though they are considered as idols. So, they say, so the Mishnah continues, and it says, Marshalehen Asurin. But what is upon these mountains and hills and so on, this is prohibited. Okay. Shenemar, as we have a pasuk. Pasuk, as I said, it's a Parsha Ekev, and it says, Lo sachmod kesed zov alehem. You should not covet, or you should not desire the gold and the silver that is upon these mountains. So obviously, what are the gold and silver? They did something, either gold and silver statues, or as another possibility, that they made, they covered it over with gold and silver, you know, in order to show that they're deifying it, you understand? So,
it does not refer to natural gold or silver that might have been.
No. Like if it was buried in the ground, right. No, it wouldn't apply to that. It would apply only to those things that they're using to decorate for the sake of Aveda Zorah, obviously. Okay? Rabbi Yossi HaGlili Eimer, he says, Eloheihem al Hehorim. The pasuk says, Eloheihem, their gods, al Hehorim, upon the mountains. So, what does this mean? So he says, Velo Hehorim Eloheihem. Okay? But not, the mountains themselves are not their gods. So, in other words, the idols that are there, these are prohibited. You cannot have any Hanor from it, okay? But the mountains themselves, they're not the gods. Even though the Goyim might think that, but as far as we're concerned, that has no bearing, okay? And the same thing, he continues with the Pasuk. Elohim al Hagvoos, right? In other words, he applies Elohim. Eloheihem al Hehorim Hakos, is the way the pasuk was. But, you know, he's taking it again. The same thing he says, and should we say, their gods upon the hills? The Lo Hagvos Eloheihem, right? But not the hills, their gods. Mipteba Asherah Asur. So now he comes to something else. Why isn't Asherah prohibited? Now, Asherah we've already mentioned several times. This is a tree or a group of trees that are considered sacred to idolatry. Okay? Either the tree itself might be worshipped, or it might be dedicated to an idol. Right.
Torah too.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Several times.
Yeah. So, what about the Asherah? How come then that Mitlemah Asherah Asur? So now we say, so why then is the Asherah prohibited? The question is, why should it be prohibited if what? If we take literally Al Hehorim, the Al Hagvoos, right? Where does a tree grow? It grows on the mountains, on the hills, wherever it may be. Okay? And yet we said what? That you're allowed to have Hanoah from those things, right? Excuse me, no. You're allowed to have, no, you're allowed to have Hador from the hills or the mountains, but not from the things. Sorry. So this is what they're trying to tell us. Why is the Asherah? So of course I would say, I mean, Asherah is prohibited because of its connection with idolatry, right? But the Mishnah has a different explanation at this point. It says, "Bibnei sheyesh bo tfisas yidei yodam." It says, it's because these trees have been worked by human beings in the sense that how do they grow? Somebody plants a tree. So that a human being is involved in the growth of a tree, right? That's what he says. All right.
Tree doesn't grow without a seed, but the seed has to come from somewhere. Right?
Correct, correct.
So a man doesn't grow it.
Okay.
I don't buy that argument.
You don't buy the argument, okay.
I don't buy it. As a matter of fact, if you carry that idea on further,
right.
You can make that argument about any tree. If the idolaters would want to worship, let's say, a pear tree or an apple tree, it would be forbidden to us, right?
That is absolutely right.
Right?
Right.
So how far do you want to carry that?
But it says clearly, lo ta'aseh lecha.
Right.
The second commandment says, lo ta'aseh. You should not make one. So if a person makes a god, make something that he calls a god.
Oh, that's different.
Okay? Well, even if it is a tree, if he plants a tree in order to make that tree god, that tree becomes a god.
Then she'll be the tree all of a sudden.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
the question I want to ask is, on hills and mountains, there is natural growth.
Of course.
The wind.
Right.
Grow.
Right.
So you have to assume you started to say
I was saying that it was more like a grove of trees. So it must
usually we think in terms of a grove, but it might be an individual tree also.
So
right.
How do you
charter oak.
There must be a bigger explanation for that.
Well, the answer is the difference would be, look, we have trees growing in my backyard, which I didn't plant. A bird came, dropped a seed or something like that. We're liable to, we'll have to pull it out or something if it goes and could damage the house, right? We know that happens. But the question is, did I decide, therefore, to plant a tree, to dedicate it? You see, that's the question. The question is the dedication that's involved.
Dedicated to
a god, that's a different story. Right.
You could do that do an idol or a savior.
Yeah,
or
right, right. So this is why I'm saying, that it's prohibited because there is tfisas yideyodim, that people have done something in order purposely to plant it with the intention, of course, of what? That it should be dedicated, you see, to Avodah Zarah. Yeah, that's the idea. Okay?
I have a little question about, since it is Shavuos, they used to say in our shul that you can decorate the shul with broken branches, with flowers, but don't bring plants into the sanctuary. Plants in their pots. Don't bring into the sanctuary. Is that a real thing? I don't know.
I've never heard that because I'll tell you in all honesty, in Kadima they do bring in geraniums in pots.
In the pots. Flowers.
Not trees.
But in Europe, I understand, in Eastern Europe, sometimes they did. They had boughs, cut off branches and so on that they would use for decoration.
But
right.
When they have social functions, the florists today bring in trees to decorate.
For social functions, all right. Into the sanctuary during services.
No, but they do bring trees.
I don't know. It's just a memory that I have. I just this is something that you have seen.
No. Social events. It's a new thing today. They have all those.
I've heard about chuppahs that are made out of plants, they arrange them that way or something like that.
Nope.
All right, at any rate, look, we understand that the basic idea behind this, again, is that it's dedicated to idolatry. We're not talking about a tree that grows by itself. and has no religious significance whatever.
Just that,
right.
It's just that the reason they give for
right.
for it is not good. It's not
yeah.
a good reason.
Well, the question is, I mean, is this Rabbi Yossi HaKlali's opinion or what? Apparently it seems to be, okay? Because he says, Mahosha Yesh Boit Fisas Yodom also says, if a human being is involved, okay, in the planting of this tree, so it's also. In other words, again, he's making a distinction between a human being who, you know, does something with it, he performs some sort of dedication, whether it's planting or something else, that makes it into an avodism. Yes. Question is, when he planted it, what was his intention? Did he immediately plant it with the idea of dedicating it, or did he plant it and afterwards he decided, you know, it would be nice to do something? That makes a difference, as we'll see. Okay? Yeah. Okay. I just want to point out, before we continue, this business of the, you know, dedicating or assigning deification, okay, to trees, and not to trees, but let's say to mountains, to hills and things like that. The Gemara in Chulin discusses whether if a person shechts an animal and says, I'm shechting this, and in dedication to the hills or something like that, even though the shechita has been performed excellently, can we make use of it or not? Do you understand?
Make use of the hill or the...
No. Can we make use of the animal, right, yeah. that is shechted, right? Right. That's the question, okay? So the question has ramifications beyond, you know, the fact of Avodah Zarah over here, right? Yeah. Says, I mean, I'll quote you what it says over there. The Gemara in the Chulin says, Hode Omar Lahar, the Hode Omar Nagda Dahar, the God of Dahar, says, whether he says that this mountain or the deity of this mountain, right? Shah Sheikh the Sheb Har, the person who is slaughtering the animal, you know, in the name of this mountain, in other words, for the sake of this mountain, says Lo Mikra Zivchei Besim. It's not considered Aveda Zora, right? The Horde Tanya the common, and we learn afterwards of Dehem Messiah that they deserve the death penalty, however, for doing it. It's for a different reason. Okay. Actually, I don't think anybody has ever executed anybody on the, you know, for this. But nevertheless, there is an opinion expressed that such a person deserves to be executed for worshipping idolatry. Okay. No, Mela. But as you can see, there is this ramification, and the Gemara is kind of lenient about this, as far as the meat itself that was slaughtered. I know we have a problem. You know, when we shecht, we make a bracha. The sheikh has to make a bracha. Obviously, he has to make a bracha. Sheikh and Shom Mitzvah, Tzivano, Allah Shechita. Okay? So, because he knows what is he doing, he is performing a mitzvah, okay? What if you have a Mohammedan who's shechting? What is he shechting to? He's not shechting to Mohammed, he's shechting to Allah.
To Allah.
So, what kind of meat do they call that? They call it halal.
Halal,
that's the term that they use, okay?
Yeah, you mean the Mohammedans use the term.
Exactly, right. So, the Mohammedan also is shechting it out in the name of his deity, right? However, of course, we also know that Mohammedans, Muslims, whatever you want to call them, okay, that if they cannot get their own halal meat, then they'll eat the kosher meat, because they know that at least it was performed according to the rituals which are failing.
Clientele.
Yeah.
Muslims.
Big Y also had a clientele of Muslims.
Where are we now?
Right. We're finishing the Mishnah. We're still in the Mishnah. Right. Okay. Omar Rabbi Akiva. That's what Aleph Resh Ayin over there means. Omar Rabbi Akiva. Ani Ovin Yadun Fonecha. Says, I will help you understand, and I'll give you the reason that Kol Mokum Shatov Beitzei HaGavoa VeGivo Niseis VeEitz Ra'anon, that wherever you find a high hill, a high mountain, okay, or a raised hill, right, or a leafy tree, right, know that there you will find Avodah Zarah. In other words, Rabbi Akiva lived in a time, he was involved eventually in the war against the Romans, and he died as a martyr at the hands of the Romans. But so widespread was this practice among the Romans that they had Avodah Zarah in all of these places. So he says, I can tell you right now.
He's condemning every tree that grows on a mountain.
Yeah.
Huh?
That's what he does.
That's what he's telling.
And every mountain.
Yeah.
Okay.
Again, I don't want.
Okay. So we have to come down to the Rashi over here. All right.
Rashi.
Yeah. It's towards the end of the great big Rashi over there. That we have over there. Okay.
Which one?
Omar Rabbi Akiva. Aleph Resh Ayin. He says Ani Ovin. Right. The Rashi quotes first. The first part. He always writes. And he says, right, Ani Ovin, Yadul Fanecha, which means Aforesh, or Yadul Fanecha, right, I'll explain to you, he says, She'en lon lidrosh mi'uto betachas eitz ra'anan, that we are not to derive that, and there's an exception from the fact that they have betachas eitz ra'anan, under every leafy tree. Because this was said only in order to show them, a place where the Amorites, in other words, the Goyim, were accustomed la avod shem avod shechovim, right? Kedei sheyechapsu yisrael shom. Because they want, they would like to catch the Jews over there, Yivarum, right? And the Jews should find them and destroy them, right? So the fact that we try to find an exception, this we find from the pasuk itself, Shalot Zivon Abedis Hehorim, that we do not find afterwards that the Torah says, destroy the mountains. I will call Eitz Ra'anan, Sivan Lonely Abed. Okay? But the Pasuk tells us that we should destroy every leafy tree. So,
buy that?
In another place it says, Vashay Rehem Tisrafun Ba'esh. Burn their groves, right, their Asherahs, in fire. So he says over here, it's only he's indicating that it might be. But again, as I say, what Rabbi Akiva is trying to say, don't burn every leafy tree.
What
he's
saying?
Trying to say is that if it's a leafy, that the goyim are accustomed to have idolatry over there. If they have idolatry, then what? Then that has to be destroyed. That is what he's trying to say.
Like a Christmas tree.
The question is, do we consider a Christmas tree idolatry or not? It's a good question. You understand?
It was a decoration.
I mean, is it a religious symbol? Or, of course, it's a pagan symbol to begin with, right?
But
this we understand.
It wasn't deified, it wasn't worshipped, it was used as a means of enhancing
the holiday, essentially.
Deified
exactly.
The statues
right.
In the church, and they deified the Salem, whatever it is, they deified.
It's a good question. I mean, the whole deal, you know, how do you approach Christianity? Because, as I say, we have to follow what the Rambam says. The Rambam says that Christianity is not a Vedasaur. Period. It's not. Okay? Even though a lot of aspects of it do resemble a Vedasaur. There's no question. I see this church in Holyoke that's being destroyed. It was in today's newspaper. And they're busy trying to save a million statues over there. Right. Right.
The
steeple. Besides the steeple, but also statues that they have, religious statues. All right. Yes. Yeah. Yes, David.
I'm trying to understand the origin of Genesis of the fear of hills, trees, etc. Is it from Pan? Like, Pan, you know, in the Banias, they have, like, you know, it's like the waterfall, they supposedly have a little statue that. Okay, is this what this stems from, that this was the worship of nature, was the worship of Pan? Is this the...
Yeah, that's one of them. That's one of them. It's true. Right.
But
there are others too. Right. Essentially, these were also associated with the Canaanite religious practices, you know, for sacred prostitution, you understand? The worship of Baal, or the feminine one, Ashtarte, or Ashtoreth, and so on, part of the religious worship is actually, you know, that they had priestesses and so on, and you came to the temple, you had fornication with them, and the groves were dedicated, you know, to this kind of worship. It's supposed to be...